let's welcome everyone here. Thank you very much for your, especially for the members. You came back from recess, and I know you've been working hard at your constituencies. That's after enjoying a very successful 2010 World Cup. I think we are all proud. And on Monday, we had an opportunity of reviewing through the policy platform of the department. I think that came at the right time, opportune time. We did hear the SAFA CEO, Minister Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, and I think it's Mr. Kulam from the Standard Bank. They were very, very good in their presentation and insightful into the issues that they were raising. I think challenges and also opportunities that are coming up as the legacy. Please let's ensure that you switch off the cell phone so that you don't get disturbances. Mine are switched off already. So I think it's a good thing that we had that review, and questions that came from the audience were also relevant. We can't say we don't have a long way to go in terms of addressing some of the challenges that were raised, but as a United South Africa, we feel nothing is beyond, you know, approach, and we can be able, as we did with 2010, we think we can be able to overcome anything. That spirit, I think, prevails in our communities, and it prevailed in this parliament, in the committee, before we went on recess, and I think it's even strengthened after the 2010 World Cup, after the World Cup. As a committee, of course, officially perhaps, use the opportunity to congratulate the winners. They did well, and I think we all saw, went through the whole thing. Some of us had an opportunity, I don't know how many of you had an opportunity to go to the stadiums, others went to the fan parks, and that was a good experience for all of us. But thank you very much for coming back. As refreshed as you look, I think you all look refreshed, and we're ready to engage with our work again. We have agreed that in one of our meetings that we call Kula to come and, although we interacted then with the previous Kula board. And now we have a new board led by Mr. Kekana. Let's use this opportunity to congratulate you, sir, together with your board, your new board, and hope for a good relationship as we had with the previous board, and we're hoping that we will be able together to achieve objectives set by your board. And together with the department, I hope that we will help you through the process of developing our communities, ensuring that we create SMEs that are good and best for our country, that will bring growth to our country too. And the CEO, I think we've been with him for some time now. Otherwise, members, all of you, you are welcomed, and the meeting is now declared open. And as per the agenda here, we will now give an opportunity to the chairperson to introduce the board and just give us a brief words from his side.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Good morning, honorable members, members of the embedded media, and you know, other assumed our new role as the new board of Kula. We have the new board members you can just go to the next. We have Ms. Sizeka Ransbeck, she's deputy chairperson of the board. Ms. Maria Ferreira, who was previously an independent member of the board, and now he's now a full member of the board. Mr. Vusi Twala, who's a new board member. Mr. Dennis Jackson, Dr. Zoe Lees, and Mr. Nkululeko Nkuli Swana, and Ms. Tavede, and Mr. Mhoto representing, Mujalefa Mhoto representing the department. Those who have been reappointed are Mr. Ishmael Tayop, Ms. Matunza, and Noah Greenhill, and obviously the managing director, Mr. Mulepo. So it's quite a big board, but fairly independent. None of the members having any relation whatsoever with Kula, but most of them with extensive experience in either development or small business development. So our mandate, really, one of the things that we set ourselves to do is really three things. One is to sustain the current operations, which are largely the wholesale model. Of course, there's some business reengineering process that we'll undertake with management, but things such as the cool indemnity guarantees and so on, those are good programs that need not necessarily be thrown away. Some of the things we have to change in terms of the way we were doing things in the past. So, and the second thing is obviously to oversee the implementation of Kula Direct, which is really a direct lending, you know, program, making sure that we've got outreach and so on, which is the subject of today's presentation. And then thirdly is just from a sustainability point of view, to make sure that there are sufficient resources and partnerships. And I think fortunately most of us have some experience in this realm of small business and or development. So it's just really to leverage whatever relationships, because our view is that this challenge that we are targeting is bigger than Kula. So we cannot address it on our own. So we need as many partnerships as possible. So, chapter, those are over the next 3 years, the things that we will set ourselves to do to make sure that the Kula brand become bigger than what it is. So with those few words, I also like to introduce Mr. Mlepo. You know him, and the Chief Operating Officer, Mkululi, who is here with us as well. So thank you very much, and if with your permission, I may hand over to the MD to proceed with the rest of the presentation.
Just before the MD take over, we want to thank you, and not just as we indicated earlier on, congratulate you, but our concern, as usual, is that we agreed that on the 50-50 representation, but we're concerned that out of 13 members, I don't know, the doctor is the woman, 4 out of 13, it's quite a concern. But this is something that perhaps the minister has to deal with, because it's taking us back. We don't want to go back there where we were fighting for some of the things. But now we are great, and we've been praised as a country. It's one of the countries that is quite progressive. We can't reinvent the wheel now. Thank you very much. Congratulate Mr. Mlepo again for reappointment. I'll call you CEO because MDCO is the same. To me, it's one and the same thing. Let's give you the opportunity to... Mr. Gagan, I'm not expecting you to respond. It's just a concern from our side. Yes. And that would also, if you appoint other, you know, people within, make sure that that is taken care of. Mr. Mulapo, over to you.
Well, thank you very much, Coleman, the honorable members once more, and the media, for the opportunity to come back and give you really an update of where we are regarding Kula Direct. I think the most important thing maybe for me to start off with is the, you know, just the summary of the Kula Direct business model, and most probably take you through what the purpose is for Kula Direct. As the chairperson alluded to, we have got the wholesale model currently, which is lending, you know, via other credit providers, and those are the products that we are having. The intention, therefore, of the retail model is to complement what we are having, and therefore to a large extent address the limitations of the wholesale model. As you know, we are depending on intermediaries, and we believe that there is still a gap that exists, and the Kula Direct model is to ensure that we actually provide finance directly to viable SMEs that cannot, you know, attract funding from other means. Now, let me then jump to the objectives of the Kula Direct. The intention is that, you know, we wanted to address the gap in the market. My apologies for the colors that are coming out in that manner. One of the things that we want to do is address what we call the institutional, you know, gaps that are there. If you look at this particular, you know, picture, you would see that those that are providing funding either, you know, from the stock sales, from the microfinance, and then you go to the commercial banks, there is still a gap that exists. And that particular gap, you know, is apparent in the SME sector. And in order for us to grow this economy, we need to make sure that we actually address that, you know, in, you know, through Kula Direct. We are also wanting to make sure that we are having geographical representativity. Currently, we have got 11 regional offices, 2 in Gauteng, 2 in the Eastern Cape. But as we roll out this direct lending model, you will see that those would be a network of branches that would be on the ground to make sure that we address the needs of our people at their doorstep. And in addition to that, which I will talk to later, is that we will have what we call small offices or home offices where our field staff, or what we call the loan officers, will be based. This would actually entail co-location in certain instances with provincial development corporations or some of our sister organizations, or actually working from home to ensure that we actually address the needs of our people as they arise. Now, the demographic profile, as you would see in your presentation, is that we need to make sure that we address the needs of, you know, women, youth, people living with disabilities, peri-urban and rural. We are looking at deep penetration into the rural areas and, of course, making sure that we do projects that are environmentally, you know, friendly. Now, this, in a way, really will ensure that we address the needs that are there. When one looks at researches that have been made, Finmark Trust report of 2009 shows that about 525,000 informal businesses need less than 50,000. And when you look at this, some formal businesses are looking at about 250,000. So even though we will provide a range of products from 10,000 to 3 million, our emphasis will make sure that we address the gap that exists, as you can see, through the 50,000 and 500,000. I think that is where we want to make sure that we make an impact so as to address the needs, you know, that are there. SMEs naturally have challenges. And in order to address the problems that are faced by, you know, these SMEs, we believe that Kula Direct will go to a large extent of making sure that you know, we address that. You will see on your slide number 11 some of the challenges that are there, especially from the supply side and also from the demand side, which would be the borrowers. And if one was just to pick one of those challenges, is that we are currently faced with a lot of challenges on the credit scoring, for instance, on the collateral requirements. And we believe that Kula Direct should go to an extent in addressing, you know, some of those challenges. Now, there is also perceived high risk when SMEs are looked at. For instance, the issue of no cash to contribute towards their businesses, no assets that they can provide as, you know, as security. Most of them are living far from the major towns where business activities are happening, and some of them don't even have an idea about the industries that they want to get into. They haven't really had any experience in running businesses before. At times, they are looking for money to supply goods and services, yet they do not actually have, you know, a contract, bad credit record due to other challenges that are facing us, the socio-economic challenges. But what we are saying is that Kula Direct must assess the risk and adjust the products to suit the level of, you know, risk that we are actually looking at. And therefore, the overarching, you know, requirement is that as Kula Direct, we should be willing to take higher risk, and we should have appetite more than the commercial banks are actually, you know, having. And then the other thing is addressing low level of non-financial support. You would know that part of the reasons why businesses are actually, you know, struggling is that once monies are given, there is no mentorship that is given, no, you know, level of support to ensure that the deficiencies that are picked up during the due diligences are addressed. But the other thing as well is training, making sure that there's continuous training of the enterprises in order to be well aware with the developments in the industries where they are. The support will not be free, and but it will actually be, you know, substantially subsidized. And the reason for that being that we believe in this, you know, philosophy that says people, once they do not actually put their skin on the game, they tend not to appreciate what they are being provided with. And but we will definitely subsidize that to a large extent. As a flagship DFI investing in the SME, we believe that we will fill the gap where the market has failed or actually, you know, does not even exist. Now, I want to go to the outcome of the Kula Direct model, is that we want to make sure that, you know, the number of sustainable SMEs increases, the number of SMEs that are perceived with high-risk category. In other words, where there is low levels of security or no security at all, no or little contribution into the business, and startups are actually supported. Jobs is one of the overarching requirements. When you look at the growth path with the Minister of Economic Development, when you look at IPEC, this is at the center of all those requirements, and we need to make sure that as an outcome we create jobs. Contribution as well to underserviced regions. One of the things is that major financiers are in the metropolitan cities, areas, but we need to make sure that we have deep rural penetration so that we can address the needs that are there. And that will be achieved through the first stuff that I showed you in the previous slides. Sustainability of retail lending business. One thing that we need to make sure is that the bad debts and impairments should actually be contained. But how do you contain this is when you get closer to your customers, when you are there, when you know where they are operating, so that there is that personal relationship. And that has proven over, you know, a number of studies that the minute there is that, you know, affinity between those people, you know, impairments and bad debts actually, you know, decreases. Of course, the overriding outcome is that of eradication of poverty. And that, for us, you know, remains key in this particular model. Now, I just want to then give you a very quick progress of where we are today. As you know, Cabinet gave approval to extend the Kula mandate to include the direct lending 3 December. The project has accomplished a number of things, and we felt that we should share with you, this accomplishment. When we were here earlier this year, Chairperson, we shared with you the local and international research outcomes that we actually embarked on as a request, by the way, from the Portfolio Committee. We have already concluded design of the products that we want to give to people, the distribution channels as well. Those have actually been looked at, and just to take you through that is that, you know, head office will have specific things, regional office will have specific roles that they are doing, and then, of course, the field staff. And the intention really is that of ensuring that there is customer-facing staff will be out in the field to have that direct interaction. And we want to make sure that within a radius of 50 kilometers, you know, of most people, either, you know, a town, you know, office or via their partners, that they are actually, maybe just to take you through a number of those without necessarily going through them one by one. And I think for me, maybe the most important one is the one about regional offices. We want to decentralize the way that we are looking at applications. We believe the regional offices should be the originators of these transactions. They should write them, they are closer to the customers, and once they are ready to submit them centrally for approval, then that will actually be done by head office. And over time, more authority will be given. And just maybe to take you through some of the field staff is that it is important for them to gather knowledge in knowing their customers. Customers in understanding the requirements of Cooler Direct, ensuring that they help them in meeting the conditions precedent. This is one of the challenges where you find facilities are approved, but before the conditions precedent are actually, you know, fulfilled, money is not able to flow. And we want to make sure that that can actually, you know, be done through by the field staff. Now, the other thing is that the stakeholders have been engaged. We have been to Portfolio Committee, even with our, you know, where the functions of Cooler were, which is a DTI. We have come, we've engaged, you know, with other stakeholders to make sure that we make them aware of what is actually happening. The risk model has already been built, and we are going to obviously use this to make sure that from time to time you adjust the pricing and the product parameters that you will be working on. The credit management framework, the customer relationship management, you know, the new organization as well, to ensure that as we continue with the wholesale model, we are also servicing the direct lending. We have to grow the organization to take care of those things. And I think the most important thing as well is that the board oversight. We believe that the board needs to be there to ensure that corporate governance are actually, you know, adhered to. And we are looking at applying for funding. We will not do this without additional funding and capitalization. National Treasury will definitely be approached. But our intention is that over time, we need to be having the means to go out and raise funding with other, you know, financiers, other DFIs in South Africa, as you see the IDCs and the PICs. And the currently in detailed design phase, you know, the creating the blueprint of procedures and policies and job descriptions, that as well has already, you know, been looked at. And then maybe let me go to the capital that we are looking at. We have looked at what we believe we can do right at the beginning as we go, you know, to the phases that I will talk about. And this is what we are estimating, you know, to look for. And maybe just to give you an example on the right-hand side, is that if we do on average 500 transactions, for instance, at 250,000 and 125 at that amount, remember I said we'll still provide between 10,000 to 3 million as we do, but concentrating mostly within the 50,000 and the 250. One can then see where we have actually arrived, I mean, come from with the estimation that we have actually given. And we believe this is achievable, and we believe that through this, we indeed can go an extent of ensuring that we touch as many SMEs as we can. And then finally, I just want to take you through the next steps that we are going to be taking. As I mentioned, processes, policies, the blueprint, and all of those have actually been achieved. Now we are moving into the build stage, where we are going to convert our regional offices to set up these, you know, branches and make sure that we do the organizational redesign and then, of course, capacitate, you know, our head office as well. One of the most important things with our phase one is that we need to physically go out and open these branches, appoint strategic partners, and make sure that we launch, you know, the SME development thing, and then, of course, go into the test model. Phase two and three would, among others, include where now we are consolidating acquisitions, takeovers of some of the institutions that we believe will add value. For instance, the non-financial, you know, services. When you look internationally, you find that many institutions are having these things in one, you know, under one roof. And we need to obviously look at how we include some of these institutions so as to provide, you know, a one-stop shop and ensure that our SMEs come and they are able to be catered for through the number of products that we will actually be providing. And thank you very much, Honorable Member.
Thank you very much, Dr. Molepo. Any additions from the Chair?
No, Chair, you know, as a retired youth, you know, I said to my comrades there, you know, the problem with the way we do things, people must not look at Kule as just a solution where you go and get money. Let's come up with a campaign which is going to involve as many players as possible for small business. Because I think if you look somewhere in between, when I think as a country we began to focus too much on black economic empowerment at the expense of SME development, you know, because the two are not necessarily the same. For me, what we have said, you know, let's come up with a major campaign which will be anchored by Kula and other partners, get a platform for this campaign, you know, who will go out, galvanize, support, and call on people to support, because if we go to, it's possible we can go to Treasury and they won't give us money. But doesn't mean that small businesses still don't require funding. So, fortunately, you know, we spoke to one of the stalwarts, you know, of the democracy in this country, you know, one of your fellow members of parliament, Prisoner 467-64, with Mr. Andrew Mlangeni, you know, and he has agreed to be a patron to champion the cause for small business. So I was actually having a chat with him yesterday. So we are going to enter into discussions with the June and Andrew Mlangeni, you know, foundation. First of all, the Mandela Foundation focused on HIV, democracy and education and children. You know, he has agreed that, you know, his name can become synonymous with economic development and small business. And because he used to be a chairperson of a listed company on the JSE and is a seasoned golfer, you know, he can relate, you know, very easily, you know, with issues around business, macro, enterprise. So he knew the legacy of this stalwart, I mean, Talande, you know, Siaparanko, you know, very few people who have that kind of honor in the movement. So in addition to what the MD has presented, we just felt, you know, let's create some excitement. You know, when we set ourselves, when people used to think lending to youth was impossible, was too difficult and so on, you know, we captured the attention of the market, we created the excitement. We couldn't meet all expectations, but I feel like with small business, let's do the same thing. You know, let's work with, well, you've got BUSA, you've got NAFCOC, you've got FAFCOs and so on, but everybody is doing their own little thing in their own little corners. We don't have one person who can galvanize, you know, all of us as a nation for small business development, which I believe will address some of the challenges that we're facing with the complaints from small and medium and micro enterprises. So I think that once we've fleshed out the proper campaign document and so on, we'll again share it with yourselves, but at least in principle, the old man has agreed that we use him productively. You know, so thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Chair. I think those are the addition that was quite important to hear. And it's good that you've indicated that you will be coming back to us with that campaign model, which is going to assist us to understand things even much better. Thank you very much. This then concludes the presentation, and I'll then open up for any clarification questions, comments, and any advices that you'd want to give. The same, Member Ntuli. Dr. Huang will follow.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, I want to congratulate the young man and his team as being elected as board members or appointed as board members, and also congratulate the MD on his appointment. And I think the Chairperson is quite correct that if you want to create jobs in our country, it's at the small and medium market. I mean, the bigger industries don't create as many jobs as in the small and medium market. And the examples that they've looked at, I see India is missing, Bangladesh is missing, because they are wonderful examples there of how small finance helps people there to develop themselves at a very, very local level. But I'm sure the other countries were good enough in the studies. Chairperson, I think this approach is very welcome, because much of the problem at the lower level is lack of finance. However, when I look at slide 10, and I think the MD referred to this, I mean, when you started off, you looked at microfinancing, you spoke about between 100 and 15,000. What I'd be interested to know, the study there that you referred to on slide 10, 110,000 formal businesses need less than 250,000. How many of those in that study were less than 50,000? How many businesses needed less than 50,000? Because as you continue in your presentation, as you continued, you told us that you were looking at, I think it's on slide 29, 625 deals of 250,000 each, 50 to 250,000. I see a bit of a contradiction there. If we want to help the smaller people, because it's usually those below 50,000 that need help. They have brilliant ideas, they can create jobs, they employ family members, etc., etc. But in terms of your targets here, you still seem to be targeting the 50 to 250,000. So I really need to know, you know, how the focus is going to be on the lower sector. And then I was going to ask about business plan development, because I think one of the main problems with small people, small businesses, when they walk in somewhere, the official will say, "Where's your business plan?" And the person sometimes doesn't know even how to spell business plan. But this is something that you require as a DFI. So I think a lot of focus has got to be placed on assisting small people to develop a business plan, if that is a requirement of lending. Otherwise, it can become very, very problematic. And then I'd also like to know, what is your projected risk allowance in terms of your payback? What are you projecting for the future? And also in terms of deposits. I mean, this is another major problem. People don't have deposits. You go to a bank, they want 50% deposit. They want you to guarantee your father, grandfather, house, your wife and everybody else, they must sign as guarantors. Now, you know, for a small person, that is something that's not possible. Would you be looking at the concept of sweat equity as a contribution towards deposit? It happens in the housing industry, it happens everywhere else. You get a loan, but if you go and build yourself or do something, that sweat equity is translated into an amount. And would you be looking at those kinds of things? Those are my questions for now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Singh. Member Ntuli.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson, and I would like also to congratulate the new members for their appointment. Chairperson, I would like to check this. We have been hearing that the Cabinet approved this Cooler Direct in 2008, and we don't know after approval what was holding on. for this Kula Direct to start, maybe, so that we, if we can find out what was the problem, so that you don't come here and prevent, and we find that it's going to take some time to implement. Well, what was the problem? Number two, it's just, what I've observed, if you can be able to quickly try to rectify this. Is that when you go to the province and you chat with the Kula people, you find that they are not connected to the provincial department, economic development department. I'll cite an example in Etewini municipality. I invited Kula, Samaf, and Sita, and the same week, the minister or the MEC of economic development in the province was also coming, but without knowing that Kula and all these departments have been there, and it seems as if they don't talk to each other. What is the problem, or how are you going to overcome that? Maybe we have to check whether even the municipality, the metro itself, the LED there, it's something different. It does not talk to these Kula or to the National Department of Economic Development. You can see they've got their own things, and we have confirmed that. Why can't we close this gap? What is the difficulty? And I had CETA. Then when you look at CETA, the Small Economic Development Agency, the work they are doing, you can see that they're supposed to be under Kula, at least. But you find that they are standing alone, and then they are doing their own thing, and then Kula is there. Why can't we have CETA in Kula, so that they go first, and then you use your Kula Direct? Lastly, I'm not sure whether it is suitable, this question to you, whether at MINMEC, where these ministers, these MECs, they meet with our minister, do they talk about what I've been asking, the synchronization of the program from national up to the local level? Thank you, Chairman.
Thanks, Member Julie. Dr. Wong?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also congratulate for the new board. And Kula is for the year 2004, it took a new strategical direction. Yeah. Your aim now, from the year today's presentation, you aim from the 50,000 to the 250,000. 250, yeah. But this, I look in, is a high risk for the, like a chairperson, you say, you indicate, yeah. Because you from the 50,000 to the, from the 50,000 to 3 million for your limit, how do you get the security? Because like the other colleague say, this is all the poor community, get this small business. But I don't think so, get under the 5% they have the security for you. So I don't know, Kula, how you ensure this loan is used in the business for you identify. Then for the security, it prevent for the in future the risk corrupt. And from the your financial research, you say you still get the funding from the IDC, etc. Because your total capital is about 1.6 billion. This is not a big amount. I don't know from your presentation. So how you can reach to the older regional? Because for your presentation, you have the regional office, you have the branch office, you have the field office. But many office, then how you can, this expense can defect for the older this office can effect for the beneficiary, older this small business people need for this small funding. I think this structure, you must be clear. can show to committee. And I remember it's the last time for you come for the briefing here. You say the Kura will become the SME bank. Then today is I think it is a presentation. You didn't highlight that again. This is more interesting. You want to become the SME bank, but your funding, where you can from all this big funding, including when you go to the overseas for study trip. I see that in many countries you're going. How you can get from the outside country support to you? Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Huang. I just want to also add some questions. I think I had a similar question as Member Ntuli around cooperation with institutions like CEDA. I know CEDA is within the economic, it's now left within the trade and industry, but it's within the realm of, you know, the work that you're doing. And I don't know how do we cooperate, because this questions the issues of cluster cooperation within government. Because if we really want to ensure that we maximize our impact on the ground, we have to cooperate at all levels. We have to cooperate, you know, intra also. Otherwise, we won't realize those benefits. So, or the objectives, I mean. That is a very good question. I had a question like that myself. And that will also address issues of separating development finance with real financing. Because the one problem with this small businesses or emerging businesses is because they lack knowledge, like you mentioned, and they need to be assisted. And I thought CEDA was there to do the job. How possible is it to expand that so that it also, you know, fits to everybody? Have you considered that? The other issue is how do you relate with the provincial DFIs or what they call parastatals? I think Member Ntuli asked a question of the relationship between yourself and the department, but I think it's more to inner cycle, because more with their parastatals. You refer to yourself as a flagship. Are you still a flagship? Yes, maybe perhaps because it's still also new, because you're saying the model was approved in 2008. But just, it will be important that you elaborate further on that, so that I understand that, because a flagship to me, it has a particular time frame, objectives with the clear time frames and so forth. If we can understand, we can understand that. In terms of the high risk, I agree with you with the identified ones, but I feel that there's two important ones that you've left out, which is the road transport infrastructure that is really making it difficult for this new or emerging entrepreneurs to be able to move off the ground. Also, the issue around the monopolization of the market by the established businesses. I'll give you an example. I wanted to assist some women in Mpumalanga who were farm workers. They understand in the forestry industry. Because they understand the environment very well. They wanted to start a business on mushrooms. You know, these mushrooms, very expensive mushrooms, and most of the people who are in that business are Italians, unfortunately. I learned to know about those. And when I think it was Monday, when they advertised for for new people to come in. You know, it was just a matter of picking up and then being able to establish yourself. You know, we tried. I remember one company, a woman-led company, tried to do that, and it was quite difficult. And you could see how boastful were those the guys, because they knew that they owned the industry, and nobody could, you know, infiltrate nor even begin to do anything. And ultimately, of course, because, you know, they established businesses, they have money, they have everything, those women ended up not even getting a subcontract, you know, subcontract. It's a serious problem of, you know, monopoly by the established businesses, something that perhaps we need to begin to look at, so that we assist those people on the ground who have such initiatives, you know, because they feel they can do it because they have experience. All what they need is to be helped by institutions like CEDA so that they can be at a particular level. And then CULA can come in to assist them financially also. Their roles, as stipulated by yourselves here, you intend to centralize the financial management, credit decision, IT system. Of course, it's okay on some of them, but haven't we learned from other institutions that, you know, centralized a lot? Because why I'm asking this, because sometimes this can act as impediments to, you know, progress. Because most of these small or emerging companies, they would like to, you know, when they don't have patience because, you know, there are empty stomachs waiting them there. And if they come to an office, they are told to wait for 6 months or so. Because last time we asked about your turnaround time, it was not clear. I must be honest when we asked. Turnaround time on applications. How long do you take, for instance, to process an application? It was not quite clear. Some of these things need to be clarified so that as you centralize, you also look at the implications, the negative implications of such. And also look at how best can you assist, because centralization is not a solution in everything. It might help in managing better, but it can stifle progress in the process. So perhaps not now, in our next engagement, you might want to come back to us on how best to intend opening up so that there's more. The fast tracking of processes, financing processes. Yeah, those are the issues I have on my side. Are there any afterthoughts before they respond? Do they respond? Thank you very much. May I hand over to the chairperson and the MC?
Thank you. I will just go through. You know, the number of questions, and then, of course, my colleagues and the chairperson, you know, and the COO will come in to help me as well. When you look at the slide that you referred to, Honourable Member Singh, you will see that we mentioned that this particular study as well indicated slide number 10, the informal, yes, that are actually below the 50,000. But I know that you are concerned about why we say 250, and the intention really is to say on average. That is what we are looking at. One of the other things that we are doing currently is we are having discussions with SAMAF as a sister organization to say really, how many people can still do businesses for 10,000 unless it's group lending? If they go to individual lending, possibly they need to actually up that particular limit so that as CULA we could possibly start, as an example, from 100,000 upwards so that they can also cater, you know, for individual loans. Currently they only do group lending, but discussions are that they will actually be going, you know, into individual lendings as well. And the issue of developing business plans, you will see under the products that we are offering, that the mentorship, we currently provide both pre- and post-investment support. And the reason being that, you know, there would still be a need for us to develop the business plans that would suit what we are looking at as an institution. Of course, the chairperson mentioned the issue of CEDA, and I think it's a very, very important issue here. And that's why you saw in our phase two and three to say, I think as part of growth, we need to actually look at acquisitions and also taking over. And it actually makes sense that if CEDA was established to support small enterprises, indeed, why are they not part of KULA? To make sure that they can provide the non-financial support, and as we have seen as well internationally, you are finding those two elements within one. And but we believe more than anything else is a political decision, but I think also from where we are sitting strategically, it makes sense that they become part of KULA. The issue of risk is that when you go into the lower levels of loans, indeed the risk is higher, and the recoverability of those loans even becomes less and less. But we believe that with the models that we are doing, if you look at all the DFIs in South Africa, they are having everything centralized. The regional offices are almost like your marketing offices. But we are saying, let the businesses and the deals be originated from the regions. The field staff, with their face-to-face interactions with these people, one of the things that we have seen as you look at the Grameen models, you know, and all other people is that the minute you have that interaction, people know where you stay, where you are having that particular business. In actual fact, your recovery rate becomes even higher. When the debit order, for instance, doesn't go through, you are there to say what is it that has happened. And that will ensure that it actually mitigates the risk in terms of recovery. And we believe that through that we are able to can achieve that. The issue of soft equity, you are correct. What we are looking at here is commitment. People should be willing to sign suretyship as an example. Where they do not have anything to provide, they need to stand behind that transaction. Half the time when you come to that, people say, we don't want to. How else do we, you know, manage to measure your level of commitment when you are not even willing to sign surety on that particular, you know, transaction? And we will definitely make sure that we recognize that, because indeed our people start off as little as they can until they come to a level where they can come to, you know, institutions to ask for money, and we need to recognize that. Maybe let me just address the issue of between December 2008 and now, and I'll leave the others to the chair and then the COO to come in. When the business case was approved in December 2008, Cabinet said, we then ask you to go and develop a business plan and implementation plan, which will include the capitalization level and how you actually intend rolling this out. So that is what actually happened. So we needed, therefore, to develop the business plan, which we took to our shareholder, and the shareholder is happy with that, and therefore now is the issue of capitalization. And that is why we are showing you what we are showing now. And of course, we believe that as Cabinet approved this, National Treasury needs to come to the party and make sure that they support us. But there are plans that we are looking at to say, let us actually go out, you know, roll out this thing at phase one and make sure that people understand exactly what we are going to be doing. So now with the MTEF processes, we will be submitting, you know, the numbers of what we are looking for, and we definitely believe that you know, National Treasury will look at those favorably. So that was really all what was required. But when we came to the previous committee, which was the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, among other things, they said, guys, go and do international study, go and benchmark, and come back to us. So that is actually what, unfortunately, you know, took time in us coming to the conclusion. But you can see from the progress given that a lot has actually been achieved, and now we're really at the verge where we say, can we launch the first branch, the second, and so on.
What we have asked the regiment is to look at how we can convert some of, because we already have 11 offices now. So, you know, without even having to wait for big capital from Treasury, just let's use what we have currently, because we do indeed have those 11 offices, which can be used effectively, because right now all they're doing is almost like being a postman, because they receive applications, review them, then they take them to Standard Bank, and they still say no, you know. So how do we, for example, then use those offices that we currently have, put in there loan officers, migrate some of the processes that we have developed during this planning phase into the regional offices, and that at least gives us a start, you know, and then we can have full staff and so on and so on. From a funding point of view, we have had a discussion with Kula, so with PIC. They have a new within Isibaya Fund. They've appointed a head specifically to look at wholesale financing for small business development. So we had extensive discussions with Mr. Roy Raja at the PIC to ask him to expect some kind of an application that can assist us once we took him to National Treasury. And there has been a discussion with the IDC along the same lines as well with Mr. Jeff Brainer to say how do they support us to do that. Fortunately, the IDC reports to this committee as well, so I'm sure you can stand on our end in terms of the discussion, you know, going forward. So that's what are taking place. So hopefully next time when we report, we won't be reporting progress on planning, but we'll then be able to report progress on the initial stage, you know, let's not even call it pilot, because sometimes you can pilot forever. Let's just start, you know, and learn from our mistakes. And then in terms of the whole issue that Mr. Singh asked around cash flow-based lending model, I think that's what we're trying to address, because if you look at banks, they have a credit mindset, so they look at security. So you must have something in order to get something. Whereas we are looking at people who have nothing to get something. So it's really more an equity-based rather than a credit-based type of lending model. And an equity-based model tends to look at sweat equity, look at cash flow, and so forth. So that's one of the things that we would have to inculcate within the market and share experiences and lessons with banks, because I don't think Kula on its own can ever address the funding needs of the market. Rather, what we should do, that from our experiences we lead, and people never used to believe you can lend money to a 24-year-old from a township to run a franchise. And as soon as they saw that happening, they all went in, you know. So I think that's the same thing that we need to do. You know, the issue around CD and Kui, I think the MD has responded to it effectively to say that part of what we should be realistically, because you know government sometimes, you know, not parliament, government, you know, on the other side, these things and discussions can take long. So one of the things that we should look at before we can talk about, you know, egos and so on that will affect takeovers and acquisitions, how about co-location? So all those offices that, you know, Takalan was showing as new expansion areas, first thing that we should look at is there CEDA office there? And then if there is CEDA office, can they give us a small little desk or, you know, 50 square meters, and then we can put a desk and somebody there and give them systems? Because most of the same staff are not supposed, as you said in the presentation, not supposed to be in the office. They need to be out there, you know, not waiting for walking. They don't need big, big offices. So, I mean, again, the same goes eventually with the issue around provincial development financing institutions. So we've got Limpopo Development, we've got Itala, you've got Free State Development Corporation, and so on and so on. Some of them who are doing exactly what Kula wants to do. So instead maybe of going into this place, how do we, for example, enter into an arrangement with them where we can have products and services where we can cooperate with them, you know. Of course, you know, it's easier said than done. You know, there are a lot of challenges in some of these provincial institutions, as you read in the papers and so on. So we obviously have to play it by ear, you know, as we move on. But definitely that has to be the attitude for us to cooperate. And again, with in terms of working with municipalities and provinces, because if actually the Israel is very smart, where we have to open, we go and challenge the mayor, you know, give us an office and da da da. We'll bring in the money, da da da, and let's link up with your local economic development strategy to fund whatever's going in there. I think most of the municipalities may agree, you know, to support us in a way. I think we will definitely do that. And I think the suggestion we're making is maybe that we should also book the presentation we're making here to the MINMEC. I think we will definitely seek an audience through the minister at that level. The issue around calling Kula a bank, you know, I said, in terms of operate like a bank, but in terms of the law, once you start calling yourself a bank, you actually need to have approval. But I told them, you can't use the word bank when they have approval from Reserve Bank. It's illegal, because that's, you know, to prevent a whole lot of people. Remember, there's all these people who've got these schemes, you know, I don't know, I can't remember what they call them, just the Ponzi schemes, you know, and they say, you know, come to the what a bank. When it's not a bank, people put in money and then they disappear. And so I think to just stay within the right way of things, we will operate like one, but I don't think we should call ourselves one, because then we'll be sailing very close to the wind from a legal point of view. But definitely we do that. And I support what you're saying around external support, you know, USAID, Ford Foundation. So we don't just to rely only on government. I think if there is financing that is there, that is looking for a home, we should definitely target it. The chairperson asked a very, it's the first time I hear that question, chairperson, of the definition of what is a flagship. I don't want to pretend that I really understand it. But you are quite correct, though. The sentiment is, at some point, we actually have to be a big brother. We can't be starting and testing and, you know, that. But I don't understand that question. I think I'll need to engage you, you know, outside this so you can educate me. So definitely when we say we're a flagship, we should mean what it is, you know. Now, the issue of centralization vis-a-vis decentralization, my personal experience has been, you know, you want to make sure that your regional offices focus more on the core rather than on the non-core. So, for example, marketing, perhaps they can talk to the local radio, do the market, but when it comes to the design of brochures and all those kind of things, let's do it centrally. When it comes to information technology, they must have the same system, but the system design and support, you know, you do it centrally. Obviously, you need to have service providers to fix some of your local area network type of issues. So what we're saying here about the centralization versus decentralization, you don't want your branch manager to be worried that, on issues that don't relate to doing their core business, as head office, we should support them to enable them to do things easily and then take away a lot of the support things that we could do centrally, and obviously economies of scale as well. So that's really the sentiment around some of the centralization, that they must do things that are core to lending and then and empower them that now let's start with, for example, giving them a right to lend up to 50,000 without any question from head office, then going to 100,000 and then 250,000 and so on and so on. So that's really what the plan is going to be going forward. One of the key deliverables for Kula is around the whole issue of customer service with respect to making sure you eradicate red tape, ensure that there's proper turnaround time and so on. So in the business plan that we saw, it's one of the key deliverables, you know, that as we land, make sure that we do things quickly, you know. So at this stage, you're quite correct that we cannot be clear about what the turnaround time is, because we depend on what, how Standard Bank works or on some of the joint venture partners. So, but I think going forward, we will definitely measure things and how we respond.
I think the future of Kula going forward is in the regions, as indicated. And with the current business which we have, which is the wholesale model, that is what we're starting to ask of our regional offices, that they need to engage, you know, with the provincial structures to see what value we can add. And I think in the interactions that we've had, you know, there are a lot of problems with the provincial development corporations. Some of them are restructuring and there's no funding taking place. And we've asked our regional offices to see what is it that they can do to actually leverage off the gap. I mean, when you look at the Western Cape, for instance, there's Red Door and there was Red Finance, and Red Finance is no longer there. And there's still a gap, and Red Door has a big infrastructure in the province. And we've asked our regional offices to start engaging with the province to see what value we can add as an organization. In terms of turnaround times, you know, with the current business that we have, there are two levels. On the wholesale side, where we provide, you know, wholesale loans to funding partners, these are larger transactions, and they need to go through the various approval structures within Kula. So the turnaround time there could be anything between 2 and 3 months, depending on the complexity. But where we have a relationship with the banks, where the application has went through the banking structures and the bank makes an application to Kula, the turnaround time that we have is 5 days. That's the target that we have. And we're running on average about 3 days. So going forward, as the chairperson has indicated, once we start lending directly, it's something that we would have direct control of.
Maybe answer on the one that the chairperson mentioned regarding this monopolistic, I think, tendencies with big business. One of the things that we, you know, are looking at, and we launched an agricultural scheme out in Malelane called Agwanze, Kula Agwanze Fund, is that once you bring in, you know, big business like TSB, who is really looking at sugar cane for them to manufacture, you know, and produce sugar, is that then already, you know, you have actually taken away the marketing risk. And that is how, going forward, we need to actually look at bringing this, you know, big business to avoid monopoly. Here is an off-taker. Small growers, on average 7 hectares, currently are growing, you know, 3 meter long, you know, sugar cane, because it's irrigated, unlike in KZN where you normally depend on rain and so on. And we actually found it working very well, to an extent that this fund to date has got more than 1,000 beneficiaries, you know, with, I think, now more than 40% of those being women growers. And I think that is the only way to say mushrooms. Yeah. Who are the actual off-takers? It be Woolworths or Shoprite Checkers. How do we actually engage them to make sure that the small growers would actually have a market? And I think that, for us, would be the best way of dealing with the monopolistic tendencies. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the responses. Mr. Singh, you requested to be excused at 10:50. You are.
I have another meeting.
Yes.
Thank you.
May we also welcome Dr. Rabi. We did receive your apology. Dr. Wang, what about? 11, okay. I'm worried that we're going to leave the meeting without people. Can you just spare us a few minutes, Dr. Wang? Please. Follow-up questions. Mr. Kekana, I think the flagship I'm referring, I just wanted to understand, why do you refer to yourself as a flagship?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Because I also wanted to understand, because from my own understanding of what a flagship is, maybe it's different from what you are saying.
I think the reason for
saying flagship is that Kula currently is the only DFI that is actually looking at SME. That's why we call ourselves a flagship DFI in the SME space. But through Kula Direct, we are saying that that will actually help enhance that particular knowledge, because currently the discussions that we are having with our sister organizations is that if Kula indeed would be doing what they are doing, should they even continue doing SME? And the answer is no. They need to now possibly ensure that everything related to what we are doing should be, you know, channeled to Kula, and those discussions are going well with our counterparts.
No, thanks for the explanation. Also, to bring to your attention that we do not have we haven't seen your business plan as this committee, and it will be interesting. Because why I'm saying that, because you keep on referring to the business plan that we have not seen as a committee. It will be important. As a result, I just wanted to find out, you know, looking at, or maybe just a follow-up first on the centralization versus decentralization issue. I was mostly concerned about, you know, the financial management aspect of it, mainly because of also one has experience in that. You know, it's something that can stifle. I was just giving you, you know, that as a homework to look at. And, you know, moreover, that as politicians, we go out there, we spread, you know, the gospel to the people that there's this product in place and it needs to be accessed. And as soon as, you know, people are ready, they've heard us, they want to engage, you find that there's no response. And if there is response, it takes very long. So that is the concern that we have, hence I was talking about decentralization issues, because if there's any way of making sure that you empower the regional offices to be able to process some of the applications without, like you were saying later on, that perhaps you have a phased-in, you know, kind of function transfers, that would assist, but we just want to know for how long will that take, because we are dealing with people that are very impatient, and you'll understand why. You've been at Sobovo, I think you understand a lot more better. You'll understand why they're impatient, and so I think now we'd want to ensure that things are fast-tracked, and you are able also to meet the objectives of the promises that we made to our constituents. And added to that, you're employing field workers. You know, these field workers are going to be even raising more expectations. Are you going to be able to handle that? Because to me it's quite a big pressure, or too much pressure, that will be coming up. And we are more than 15 years now into democracy, and people are more, you know, aware of their needs more than any other thing, and they do read a lot, and we've upped, you know, the levels of education and all that, both formal and informal, and as we do that, obviously people are able to engage. What we want to know is whether are you ready, will you be ready with this new model to come to pitch in, or what, or what. And as you indicated, the Finmark Trust report, as I look at what your needs are in terms of your presentation, you said your capital requirements would be 1.6 billion. Is that, am I reading that correctly? Over 3 years. Okay. It will be important that we, like I said, because that would be within, will be included in the business plan, isn't it? It will be important that we be supplied with that business plan so that we understand everything about this. I can't remember. There's one issue I wanted to write. But but it's fine. Oh, I thought the question by Mr. Singh was still standing, chairperson of the board. He just wanted to know if this number for below 50,000, whether these are the actual numbers, are they only from the informal businesses? Do we have numbers from the formal businesses that are below 50,000? We don't have. If perhaps we, because I thought that was the gist of his question. If we can understand that, and if what you are putting here is the FinMac Trust report, is what you are working on actually? That's the basis for your business plan going forward. You should also clarify us on that, because I had a question that I did not ask. I wanted to ask, but after Mr. Singh asked that question, I thought I shouldn't. I just wanted to know how many, for instance, have you targeted? Maybe for the MTF, it will be important that we understand that. That's why the flagship is about that. You understand you have an objective and then time frame. That objective, those objectives come with the targets, of course, so that you don't over or under estimate for yourself or over or under budget. So that is, those are the issues. How many have you targeted per province, you know? Because issues of geographic spread also very, very important. The issues that you raised of also attending to the urban-rural issues is very important. We agree with you. But it's important that we don't just hear you saying that we want to see it in black and white. Understand what you mean by that so that you can be able to follow up, because some of us are coming from rural areas. We want to be able to follow up and to track also and trace what you're talking about. So that as we address our constituencies, we can also be conscious of information on your behalf. Yes. Babentul, Dr. Rabi.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Mine is not a follow-up, but I'll say it's something I will say you have to guard. It's about the competing competences. You know, there's the story of saying the police, SAP, we are not satisfied that they are working properly, but you find that the prisons are full. And we start saying that, hey, but the prisons are full. How can we reduce the... But at the same time, we say the police must arrest people, and we say we are not satisfied. So I'm putting that example. Your competency is to develop these small businesses. At the same time, you want to make a profit. I remember that was last year when you were boasting to say you have been able to have a surplus of so many millions. At the same time, you were saying that the government is not giving you the capital. You get what I mean? That sometimes you start to lose what is your competency. Is it profit making or is it developing the country? If you can, but I'm not saying you must respond now. But if you can put that in mind, that whenever you are addressing us, we must have a way of clarifying those two competencies. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, my apologies for being late, but I don't know whether this question has been asked, but Kula, do we have a specific model? I believe that Brazil is doing very well in its informal sector and so forth. And have we looked at their success rate? And Is it possible to furnish us with a figure how many of the businesses that Kula assists or creates or helps, how many of them are successful and how many of them are failures? Because we've been through a recession and we're still not out of the woods yet. So I'd like to have their figures on that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. May we give to yourself?
Well, thank you. I think, as you say, that you're correct in that we shouldn't really be driven, you know, by making these profits. It is really about developing businesses and ensuring that those businesses are sustainable. On the one hand, of course, you would know that we also need to remain sustainable, and I think it is common knowledge that Kula does not get an annual allocation from National Treasury. So in ensuring that we look after the investments and get, you know, people to pay back, that has helped us over a number of years to plow back those surpluses into more transactions to an extent that currently you are sitting with a book that is obviously around R1 billion. And I think that is actually where we are coming from, because one of the legs is that we need to make sure that we are sustainable, and so that we can actually ensure that we even support more businesses. But that shouldn't indeed be something that drives us, because at the end of the day, it means we may end up, you know, turning others back by virtue of them not, you know, being able to can, you know, fit the category that we are looking at. Dr. Rabi, we have looked at, if you look at our presentation in terms of international study that we were, you know, required to do, is that we looked at Brazil. You know, in the northeastern part of Brazil, Fortaleza, there is a bank there called the Bank of Northeast. And they have got a very interesting model called Credit Amigo. This Credit Amigo, which works really around the same principles of Grameen, of, you know, group lending and so on, where you're looking at the recovery rate of around, you know, 98%. But the secret is the issue of loan officers. People who are closer to the enterprises, who even know where they stay, you know, where they, you know, where they actually operate these businesses and so on. That actually for us is a risk mitigant. Over and above the fact that we actually educate, as you see in our budget, we are looking at ensuring that a large extent of what we will be doing is to educate people, because unfortunately, people still believe that because it's government money, why should we pay back? That we believe that can be, you know, dealt with if we educate people and they know what their obligations are. Looking at Kula, over a number of years, you know, if you look at our impairment levels, you know, from 2003, where the numbers were very high, we actually reached 10%. But with the past, you know, economic meltdown, indeed, you know, you're looking at about 22%. The only way to measure is for us to go, obviously, to the RFIs and look at, you know, their levels and obviously the businesses that went under and so on. And those numbers can actually be made available. But I have got the COO here who possibly could give more inputs in case I haven't covered everything. But we are looking indeed at increased impairment levels. I think we have seen this with commercial banks and everybody else. But I think we can say that we are still within, you know, the levels that are actually acceptable. It's not like we're up. Thank you.
Chairperson, the question you asked around state of readiness, you know, to implement this Kula Direct, I envisage that by the end of this year, at least all the development of operating processes, control systems, and all those kind of things should be completed, and at least with our existing regional offices, we should have deployed them. And between that and says on about the, before the conclusion of the financial year, we should at least, if not all, in all of them, starting to, you know, to lend. The issue of pressure, yeah, I think, you know, you learn a lot from it. It's, you know, I think we just need to go out there and, you know, just do it, you know, because otherwise you plan forever and, you know, you never get to get anything going. And I think we learn more from being in the field rather than more and more and more and more planning. I think we end up planning to plan, you know. So I think for us, let's just do it and see what happens, you know, and make mistakes, learn from those mistakes, let's not hide them, you know. So that's definitely what we will encourage from the board point of view that we start. So are we ready? We're ready to begin the deployment of those products. And also, I mean, I said to management, sometimes we tend to go overseas and this and so on. And, you know, you forget that the largest bank in the world, the State Bank of China, bought Standard Bank, which is a South African bank, in order to learn from Standard Bank. It is the largest bank by market cap, by loan size and everything. So one of the things that I did was, you know, not that I have a fear of flying, but I just generally don't like going overseas. So I think it was the most beautiful country. Cape Town is the most beautiful, you know. So, you know, not that I want to learn from overseas, but I said, just go and talk to Standard Bank. You know, it's the largest bank in the world. But into Standard Bank, and Standard Bank officers are now in China to help that bank become a better bank. Well, let's see what they're doing. So, you know, so we had a meeting with them. They, and we met with FNB and everybody, but at least Standard Bank, they even in principle agreed to give us support. So run out the branch. Why reinvent the wheel? I mean, they have branches. They've got systems. They've got operating processes. As a corporate citizen, you must ask the hey, boss, help us, you know, rather than for us to go to overseas and spend a lot of money on aeroplanes and so forth, you know. So for me, that's really been the approach that, of course, they are not developmental, though. So, but at least in terms of, if you go, a lender is a lender, systems are systems. The only issue is your risk appetite and the, some of the developmental things you do, such as, so those will learn from Brazil, we'll learn from India and so forth. But when it comes to bank systems and those kind of things, we have them here. You know, so I think we need, just need to utilize them. So the other issue here is one of the things that, you know, the issue around the FinMac Trust, and so I've had that discussion with FinMac Trust, is that what we need as this country, we have very good credit scoring and credit bureau that measure behavior for individuals. Which data is gathered from your, you know, from your retail companies, from lending and so on. We need to develop the same for enterprises, you know, and so that's one of the things that hopefully as CUDA, we can work with every lender so we can begin to share enterprise-related lending, credit behavior and so forth. Because often if you, you know, if you look at that, that information tends to be very kept by everyone. So we don't share it into a pool. So I think if we begin to share into a pool, we can begin to come up with a more intelligent information that is based on hard facts rather than doing research. You know, it can be really based on actual returns. So that's one thing that we'll probably have to look at. I agree with you about the profits and those kind of issues that as CUDA was there to take risk where private sector cannot, so we can't just measure ourselves on profit, even though we want to be sustainable.
Thank you very much, the MD and the chair of the board. I think it's very, very important that what you have indicated around, and it's quite interesting also to learn that China bought Standard Bank solely because of its performance, which is quite a plus. And I agree with you, why go there when we can utilize, you know, we can get that information within. Um, one issue that I wanted to ask whether, because I had this question from one gentleman. I happened to be with in a flight one day going somewhere. He was going overseas to get his to graduate. He was specializing in enterprise development management, something like development. And he owns, I guess, his businesses around aviation. He indicated that one of our weaknesses in South Africa is understanding of enterprise development itself, because everybody talks about enterprise development. But whether we really understand what we are talking about is something else. You know, some of these things, you know, they sort of begin to engage you personally as to whether do you understand some of these things, so we just talk about them. And because I also believe if you understand them, then you'll be able to develop those modules that would assist you achieving whatever that you think you understand better. So perhaps you need to do that. There's a lot that we need to engage on or in as the two entities, I think, as the portfolio committee and yourself. We will from time to time come back to you just for that information. I know we still have the strategic plan discussions, tabling and discussions outstanding, which we were promised that somewhere between the end of July and beginning of August, the department will be tabling, and we hope to engage with all those stretch plans from the entities in August. But I want to make a request, because we'll be going on the outreach program. Starting from next week, we would like your participation there. I know that the secretary has already communicated to yourself, and I've requested him to request you to really provide us with people who have a know-how, who understand, you know, issues. Unlike a person would say, I'll still go back to inquire and come back to you. We don't want such people. So if you can assist us with that, we'll appreciate very much. Otherwise, thank you very much for the briefing and for making understand your business, because it's only through understanding that we can represent you well out there, because Kula is not yours alone. It's the government, it's for everybody, so we need to spread the gospel. Thank you very much. And members, I know that other members are not around. Others are abroad. Others are on their other committees' outreach programs. But those who managed to come, thank you very much for your attendance. And the department, the media, thank you. And that would then conclude our meeting. And we're looking forward for further engagement. Thank you.
Hallelujah. I can even talk to you.
Yeah, so it's